Nico, Brian, Mike, Dustin. It's Ken McGreen, a.k.a. Scott from The Walking Dead. And I'm here to ask you, don't go out there. Podcasts are awesome because it's about conversation and hearing people who think for themselves, exchange thoughts, exchange ideas, and respond to each other in real time. And that actually reminds me of why The Walking Dead, one of the reasons I think The Walking Dead was so big for so many people, wasn't so much the walkers or the special effects or the action as much as it was watching real people, quote unquote, go through these extraordinary circumstances and have to deal with these things in real time and kind of imagining ourselves in these crazy scenarios. But at the end of the day, it's about human connection. Hope you have tons of fun with the podcast, and I wish you much success. Don't go out there.
They've conquered the big screen. Now, get ready for the spin-off sure to send chills down your spine. It's Nico, Brian, Mike, and Dustin in Don't Go Out There, the series.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Don't Go Out There podcast. Just want to thank all of our fans and listeners. Really appreciate the support. You guys are awesome. Before we get into tonight's review, just want to give a quick shout out to our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Everything about our podcast is on the website. All of our episodes and interviews, if you want to check those out. We've done some incredible interviews in the past. Go check them out there in a specific tab by themselves so you don't have to scroll through hundreds of episodes on Apple or Spotify, etc. We also have our store if you want to grab a shirt, a mouse pad, a hat, all that good stuff. We'd love to see your pictures, you know, rep your favorite podcast. And Chan's Etsy page is also attached if you want to grab a Tumblr. All of our social media links are on there as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok. Like us, subscribe us, follow us, all that good stuff. And the last thing I want to shout out on our website is our Patreon. We call it Blood Donors. We have the traditional monthly reoccurring kind. If you want to support us, help us pay the bills, as we say. Or if there's a movie you want us to review, that option is available as well. Just check out our website, don'tgooutthere.com. Also, if you haven't noticed, we've recently joined the Believe Network, so there's some ads on our program now. But if you want ad-free content, go check us out on Blood Donors. The ad-free episodes will be available there. We appreciate your support. We hope you enjoy the episode. I'm really excited for tonight. We're going to be concluding Dustin's season, his choice, The Walking Dead Season 1. I'm going to be doing the scene by scene tonight. Before we get into it, I'll just kick us off. Really liked episode 5. I remember texting you guys about that. It was really emotional, had some strong high points. I thought 6 was okay. Me and Brian kind of talked about it going to Spookala a couple weekends ago. It's definitely kind of one of those things where it ends, but it's kind of like throwing like spaghetti noodles at the wall, see if it'll stick, see if, you know, the fans are going to want more. So it wasn't like a bad ending by any means, but it definitely didn't conclude anything. It left a lot of questions. It was basically saying, hey, if y'all will keep watching, we'll keep making it. So yeah, I did like it, but I really liked episode 5. I don't know why, but like the past few like movie reviews, series reviews, I've just been really appreciating the stuff that gets an emotional pull out of me. And episode 5 did. It was really, it was a good one. At the end, we'll probably give this a series rating for the season, and I will be relatively high. So, Dustin, I liked your show. I didn't hate it you hated mine. Go ahead, brother. I know you didn't hate Hill House. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was about to say, let's clear my name real quick. But, no, I'm really glad you enjoyed it. I think this season finale, episodes 5 and 6, I think, like you said, it was very effectively done, really pulled on the heartstrings at moments. And if you know – going in, if you, or at least, you know, sometimes you don't know, you have hopes. If you have hopes that they're going to green light a season 2, this is a perfect way to do it. This is a perfect cliffhanger to leave us on, because if they ended it, you're like, okay, well, I guess I just imagine the life goes on. They went to the CDC, nothing happened, blah, blah, oops, spoiler. No hope there. But if they do go on, you're like, okay, the door's wide open. There's so much possibility. You saw some characters kill them, like accept their fate and just die. You saw some characters want to do that, but were talked out of it. And it's like, this was a very effective way to wrap up season 1.
Yeah, I'm on board with Nico here. He was right with what we talked about on the way to Spookala. Overall, as a whole, I wouldn't say I'm disappointed, because I wasn't. But I'll say I felt unfulfilled after this. To me, this was a mini series or a long movie, you know, and not to me really a season, and not really a first season of Walking Dead to me. That to me is season two. By the way, I'm pretty balls deep into season seven right now on my watch through, and the first six seasons of this show, just to tell you where I'm at, are in the 9 to 10 range for me. Now, season seven is a different story, but we'll get there one day, maybe. But anyway, though, great episodes here. It just felt like a midway point than a season finale, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And that's really funny what you said, Nico, because we couldn't be more polar opposite. I was bored to tears almost in episode five and loved episode six.
That's a really good point, Brian, about it feeling like it did feel like a mid-season finale. But, you know, I think from an AMC standpoint, it's like, well, I think this is going to be a good show. Let's green light six episodes to start with. And then you definitely see the seasons get longer as we go. So I get that, though. You're right.
All right, guys. You got any more opening thoughts before we just jump into the scene by scene? Episode 5, Wildfire. Episode starts with Grimes radioing for Morgan. He tells him he found others, his family. Atlanta is not what they thought. Do not enter. It belongs to the dead. He tells their location and hopes they find them. Lori consoles a grief-stricken Andrea who can't stop staring at her sister's corpse. Lori says they have to take her body and they'll be gentle as they can. Daryl puts a pickaxe to a walker's head and they toss it onto a fire. Rick walks to Andrea and she pulls a pistol on him immediately. He backs away, apologizing. Glenn tells Daryl to move that body to a different row. We bury our people, not burn them. He's still pissed his brother was left for dead. Jackie yells out that a walker bit Jim and the group circles him. T-Dog restrains him and he says he's okay. Daryl thinks they should put a pickaxe through his head. Dale tends to agree. Grimes suggests they try and get Jim some help from the CDC. Daryl goes to kill Jim, but Rick puts a pistol to his head, stopping him. Dale pays his respects to Amy with Andrea and tells her how he lost his wife. Cancer. He took her to everything he could, and she accepted her death, but he couldn't. Dale says these girls were the first people he cared for since his wife passed. Andrea pulls out her birthday gift and feels guilty for always missing her birthday in the past. She puts the fishing necklace on Amy, and Dale walks away. Carol puts the pickaxe through Ed's skull since he was her husband. She weeps as she strikes him multiple times. Andrea realizes Amy is still breathing and her eyes open, but she's infected. Andrea apologizes to Amy, and she sits up growling, trying to attack her. She tells her she loves her and puts a bullet into her skull. Brian, that's the opening set of scenes. What'd you think?
So Ernest Dickerson directed this episode. This is actually his first Walking Dead credit, but second appearance on our show as he directed my guilty pleasure pick way back when, Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. Other than that, though, he's pretty much like Kevin Smith, where he just kind of does a few episodes of TV shows here and there. But regardless, great job here. Nothing stand out as bad. But let me also say this. I'm almost through seven seasons, like I said. And the best, I don't know the next time I'll be able to say this. So I'm going to say it now. But the best standout director that I've seen do any episodes of this show has been Greg Nicotero. Like, he doesn't start directing until the end of season two. But the shots, like I said, they were standout enough for me to say, who the hell directed this episode? And then look it up and start digging. He's a great director.
Yeah.
Now, something else that's kind of funny, but you just kind of roll with it, though, through the show is like the sound effects when they stab walkers. Like a few times here in this group of scenes, I guess especially because I'm going back and forth from the future to now the past. But in this group of scenes, when Daryl was given one a pickaxe, it almost sounds laughably juicy, which that's what she said. But you know what I'm talking about? Like, come on. Like, Another goof, like you can clearly see Emma Bell as Amy breathing while she's laying here being talked to by Andrea. That I'll forgive because it's the great Emma Bell. But also, why does it take so long for her to turn and others not so long to turn? Like, I don't know. Again, like that's just something I think everyone trying to maybe get their feet underneath them, maybe establish this lore and stuff this season. So mistakes like that are definitely going to happen. You know, we talked about that with the first couple of episodes with the zombies doing things they don't ever do the rest of the season. But this is Emma Bell's last appearance of the series. Bell would return to the series actually in the third season, but just as a voice. And the last thing I have to say really is just, it's just a good set of scenes. You know, it gives everyone a breather, some emotional weight with Andrea, some great effects on Carol going ham on Ed's brain. Dustin brought it up, but it is crazy the character development and growth that we get for Carol throughout the series.
Yeah.
Although, you know, these walkers were already dead, so I'm not real sure what the point of all of, you know, going around and stabbing them all in the brains when they were already stabbed in the brains. It did. It gave us an excuse to have some great Nicotero effects again, so I'll allow it.
Hey, double tap. We're going to do spoiler. We're going to do Zombieland soon enough.
Yes, but we are.
Before Next I month. Get into my scene by scene breakdown here, you questioned how long it took Amy to turn. I mean, they kind of touched on that when they get to the CDC in next episode, when they talk about the varying turn times and some are longer than others, and there's no rhyme or reason for it. Yeah.
Okay. So there's no. That's right. That's right. So you answered my question.
Yeah.
There we go.
So, and I kind of like that variable too, because it's like you know, it adds an added layer of threat. Like, okay, how much time do we have? Nobody knows. So yeah,
I do too. I like it. I'm glad you said that.
Off the bat, I like how we get the immediate callback to Morgan. Like I mentioned before, I love how this show does a good job at keeping all the moving parts active in storylines. And it's good to see they didn't abandon the plot point of Rick trying to find Morgan at dawn each morning. I really like that. Andrea being catatonic next to Amy is understandable. Like, she's in shock. And
right.
Then it's a great touch to have her pull the gun on Rick and tell her she knows how the safety works. Great callback to episode 2. Although, I'm not sure why we heard the gun cock there. She just lifted the gun in the air. She didn't cock it at all. She didn't slide it. So that's kind of an error. But sad when we find out Jim got bit. He already had to watch his family get eaten, and now he has to deal with the slow process from a bite. Wish for his sake that he had just been eaten. Finding out it's Amy's birthday and that Andrea did end up stealing the necklace for her when she was at the store with Rick, that's sad as hell also. This episode's off to an emotional start here. Carol saying that she'd take care of Ed isn't emotional for me, though. She was all sad, but she should have been rejoicing. He was a piece of shit. And then she really got into it and laid into his ass. That was acceptable overkill there. I loved it. Amy's reanimation took us right back to the emotional town, though. That's tough. Andrea was playing with fire by putting her face next to Amy's ear to her face to hear her breathing and then waiting to shoot her as long as she did. But it's understandable. I mean, that's her only living relative at this point. So this is a great open to this episode to me.
You know, speaking of putting your face near the zombies or the walkers or whatever, I noticed that throughout the show, too, because this happens a lot, especially with their loved ones and stuff. Didn't they say in this season that you could be infected by being scratched, or was it only bitten? Did I miss
scratched.
That?
Yeah, scratched.
Okay,
yeah.
So it almost seems like that's abandoned. It almost seems like people just don't care about the possibility of getting scratched by them. Because it's like even when they do like hand-to-hand combat, like they'll have them close and then just, you know, stabs. And a lot of them are stabs to the neck and stuff, and they still die. So there's a lot of inconsistencies, I think, sometimes.
That's a good point. I kind of wonder, and I've watched this show the first 6-7 seasons. I've watched it multiple times, but I've watched the whole show once. I kind of wonder if that's something that they just abandoned. Like, maybe it was a fear at the beginning, but it wasn't confirmed that scratching can turn. I don't know. But you're right. Even early on when it is a, hey, don't get scratched, they're way too close.
Yeah, I agree, Dustin. It was a really emotional opening set of scenes, and I really liked them. Rick and Shane are digging holes, and Shane tells Rick he blames him for leaving so many casualties. Daryl thinks it's a mistake not burning the bodies. Jim begins to panic as he feels bad and starts seeing walkers in his mind. Andrea and Dale put Amy into her grave in an emotional moment. Carl asks if they're safe now, and he promises he won't leave again. He asks to talk to his mom alone. He asks if she blames him for not being here. Lori says the best she can do is say neither of you are completely wrong. Lori is hesitant to head towards the CDC. They're all terrified. Look at their faces. Carol tells Rick and Lori Jim's fever is worse, and he asks for water. Jim asks Rick to save a grave for him. Jim begins to cough violently. Shane walks up to Lori to tell her to talk sense into Rick. Rick walks out as Shane converses with Lori. Lori says we should trust his gut. Shane asks them to do their sweep. Rick asks why Shane won't back him up. He gets pissed when Rick says if it was his family, he'd do the same. Shane takes offense, saying he protected them like they were his own. They hear a twig snap and look around. Shane aims the gun at Rick until Dale walks up. Shane jokes they should all wear reflective vests out here, but Dale isn't buying it. The three return to the camp, and Shane says he's been thinking about Rick's plan. He says he trusts his instinct, and we need to stick together. He asks those who agree they leave first thing in the morning. Rick is radioing to Morgan again to tell him their plans to head to the CDC. Jim wakes up swiftly coughing as Shane gives out the instructions. Morales tells them they aren't going. They're going to Birmingham to family. Rick gives Morales a 357 and they all hug each other. We see a note left for Morgan on the Challenger. All right, Brian, it's the next set of scenes. What'd you think?
All right, I've got to call this out. Can we talk about, and I know we've brought this up before, but this, especially on this show, but can we talk about how easy it is that these people dig graves? I mean, you know how fucking hard it is to dig a damn hole, and these people are all malnourished, definitely not hydrated. It's near Atlanta, so it's at least 300 to 423 degrees outside, at least. And, yeah. I mean, anyone notice how these motherfuckers just knock out deep-ass graves like it's nothing, like all the time. Yeah. Just go out
and dig a fucking hole. And we're just ignoring the fact that Georgia's, you know, primarily red clay, just like East Tennessee. That shit is not easy to dig through.
Yeah, well, I noticed it, guys. But anyway, very intense and deep shot in this group with Shane pointing the gun at Rick. You know, last episode when he came back, you almost had Shane at least appear super happy that he was back for a second. And I'll be honest, you're like remembering this scene. I thought that this scene came in season two, but no, comes right here. And that just shows like how quick Shane turns on Rick. I mean, fuck that bastard Shane to the ends of the earth, man.
Yeah.
And last thing I want to do is shout out Morales. Juan Gabriel Pareja. Apparently he comes back in season 8, but I haven't made it there yet. Episode titled All Out War, which sounds like it's my type of episode. I'm pumped about that. But he's also one in almost this entire cast that Frank Darabont brought to The Mist, to which we're reviewing next week. That has at least 35 cast members from this show that's in that movie. I know it's coming up soon over on the movie review pod. But anyway, more than halfway through, I don't know, probably around 66% through, I guess, if we split these up in 33.3333%. But anyway, this episode is almost done, and it's been really slow as hell for me, and I'm ready for it to pick up.
Shout out to Scott Steiner. You almost did some Steiner math there with the 33%. First off, I just want to start by saying, fuck Shane here, man. Blaming Rick. Like, he may have some validity to his points, but he lost all credibility and right to speak with me when he porked his best friend's wife. Fuck off. Jim's descent was well done. Good to see it from his perspective of what happens when someone is bit and that whole process. Good husband and wife moment with Rick and Lori talking here about whether he was right or not and the plan. Their dynamic was great to me. Lori backing Rick's plan to go to the CDC just despite Shane was great to also. That's a good wife. Whether you believe it's the right move or not, side with your man, show solidarity against the op. I love it. Shane pointing the gun at Rick in the woods was a great seed to plant, especially for like what you said, Brian, what you've seen, what happens in the future episodes. And Shane deflected it perfectly too. Like, he didn't realize it was Rick and they should wear a reflective vest. That's good shit. Morales and his family deciding not to go was a nice touch also, because to me, it's realistic that not everyone would be on board with this. Some people would have differing plans. Like, that's just how groups work. It's another good set of scenes. No real criticisms of this episode so far. I know, Brian, you're saying it's a little slow, and from an action standpoint, it 100% is. But man, they're drawing on the emotions here.
All right, guys, here's the ending of this episode. The vehicles drive away towards the CDC. The RV breaks down from the hose. Jackie tells them Jim is getting bad as Shane and others go to check out a possible gas station. Jim says he's in a lot of pain and they got to leave him here. I want to be with my family. Whew, that one hit me. Jim tells Rick he knows what he's asking. Leave me here. That's my decision. Rick tells the group what Jim said, and Dale says Jim has given his answer. Shane and Rick leave Jim by a tree, and Jim says the breeze feels nice. Jackie consoles him with tears, and Rick asks if he wants a gun. He denies it, saying they'll need it. The others nod at Jim and walk back to the RV. Jenner makes a video. It's been 63 days since the virus went global, and there's no clinical progress. Jenner is doing research on the virus, and the alarm goes off, and he enters a room for decontamination. He screams when the research he was doing is destroyed over safety concerns. He makes another video explaining what happened. He seems to be losing his marbles. The others make it to the CDC, and there's dead bodies all around. They begin the trek to the building as they maze through the corpses. Jenner sees them on camera heading towards the building. Walkers appear, and Daryl is pissed. Panic ensues until Rick sees the camera move. Rick begs for help as Jenner watches on, and suddenly, the doors open as the episode ends. I really like the ending. Brian, what'd you think?
So I do really like how the Jim plotline played out. I mean, you see this. I mean, at least I did. And I think, okay, well, he's going to turn. They're going to have to put him down. But great writing from Darabont once again, because this shows me at least that I don't know what's going to happen. And I love Lori's line telling them that it's not their choice. It's his, and fighting for Jim's choice. And that 100% comes back into play at the end of next episode as well. We meet Noah Emmerich's Jenner. Definitely a clear reference to Edward Jenner, who developed the vaccine for smallpox.
I thought it was Bruce.
In Wind Talk. Oh, I thought it was God Almighty. No, I don't think so, man.
Oh, my fault.
So. Samsonite, I was way off. Anyway, my man Noah Emmerich was in Wind Talkers, by the way, with the great Nick Cage. Fantastic movie, by the way, about my people being used in the old World War II as radio ciphers. Go watch it. Great movie, Wind Talkers.
That's a great movie, but I can't let it slide that you just said great and Nick Cage like back to back in a sentence.
Well, I knew you would agree. That's why I said it. I knew that you were on board with that statement. Anyway, decent set of scenes again. Just a very slow episode overall for me. I didn't love it. It would definitely be in the bottom pile of the six episodes in season one for me.
So we get a very upbeat and dramatic score as the group heads out, and it's hilariously broken up by the RV breaking down. I don't know why. That popped me. I laughed. Great job on Jim here. His coloring was drastically changed. They did a really good job showing his deterioration. Emotional scene yet again as Jim is left to die by the tree. Seems a little uncharacteristic, though, from the group. I know they don't want to kill the living, but he's going to turn into a walker, which makes him a potential threat to them and to other living people as well when he turns. I think realistically they would have killed him. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. I like to cut to Jenner at the CDC with his video diary. Great way to show us what was going on there. I do find it a bit unlikely that he'd flub up like that and torch his research with an accident. It's an amateur mistake by a pro. Great shot as the camera draws back, showing how big the room is and driving home just how alone and isolated he is there. That was a fantastic shot. When the group arrives at the CDC, that was incredible. The panic of the group, mm-hmm. the desperation from Rick, and then the relief when the door opens. Just awesome stuff there. And overall, this is a damn solid episode that really pulled on your emotions.
And you're right. You would think that if he was here by himself, he would disengage some of those safety protocols. I mean, you know, who's the only person that could get hurt? Himself.
Yeah.
So, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Unless he just didn't have control over it, but I don't know.
That was my thinking. He didn't have control over it. That's why he didn't. But he kind of wanted to die anyway, so I don't know.
We find out in the next episode.
What
we find out in the next episode, whether he wanted to or not, like it looked like it was happening, like the place was set to blow. But I don't know. I just feel like the mistakes leading up to it, maybe he couldn't disengage it, but the mistakes leading up, I don't think he would have knocked it over like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm with you. Y'all got any final thoughts or fun facts for this episode before we jump into episode six?
I've got two. I'll go ahead, Dustin, because I don't think I've got yours. But it is established in this episode that it's been 6.5 months since the outbreak that caused the entire apocalypse, which makes what I said last episode about Carl and Lori being so upset. I don't know why this sticks with me, but you know what I said about Carl and Lori being so upset that Rick wasn't originally one of the ones stepping out of that van. To me, that was so bizarre, especially that this is 6.5 months later. I mean, you would think that they would be crying literally if everybody that shows up and all these people left and they were just supposed to come back and there was never supposed to be extra people, but yet they had them crying because Rick didn't get out of the car. But anyway, I also think it's kind of bizarre and bullshit that Rick survived that long in the hospital now being that long, 6.5 months, but it kind of does make Lori fucking around with Shane. I mean, it's shitty. Don't get me wrong. But at least it's a little bit more believable. So I guess it's like a give and take there where, you know, I know we had that discussion throughout last episode and this season. So I don't know. I wanted to at least throw that out there. Either one doesn't make sense or the other doesn't make sense. So it's kind of, I don't know, give and take with that. And the last one I had
was definitely give and take because Shane was given and Lori was taken. That is for sure. Is this thing on? Go ahead.
But the episode's title is an homage to Michael Crichton's The Andromeda Strain, which is about the development of a pathogen in a laboratory.
All right. So the Center for Disease Control and Prevention are high security, so it was not possible for the production to film there. Instead, the Cobb Energy Performing Arts Center doubled up as a CDC, which is fitting to me because over the past, I'm not going to say any specific amount of time, but 5 years, it almost seems like the CDC is performing arts. I don't know, depending on who you believe. At the beginning of Wildfire, Edwin Jenner mentions that it has been 194 days since Wildfire when the disease got out of control, but not yet global. This takes place on the fourth day after Rick wakes from his coma. No mention of signs of a disease at the time of Rick's near-fatal shooting in days gone by. That suggests that he could have been comatose for over 6 months. So absolutely, Brian, I too find it hard to believe that he survived in a hospital all that time.
Yeah, I agree with that. How long have I been in this hospital? 5 weeks? I'm just kidding. Dustin, before we move on, I gotta tell you, friend of the show, Jared Summers, personal friend of mine as well, he texted me the other day when he listened to our episode, and he said, tell Dustin he's got to chill. That two little Debbies in one day was an outrageous comment.
Outrageous. It was outrageous.
Hey, that's my fault. I almost sent y'all, I went to the gas station like the next day after I said that on air, and I saw the little Debbies there, and I almost sent y'all a picture. I was going to say, I'm about to pick up a lure. Y'all want one? But I didn't. So
I knew. Oh, my God.
All right, guys. Since I was doing scene by scene, I'll just say real quick, like I mentioned, episode 5 I thought was really good. I understand it didn't have a lot of action, but man, sometimes I need a break from the action. I just want some character emotional pull, and I got that, and I appreciated it.
I feel you.
All right, episode 6, TS-19. Yeah, episode starts with Shane in the hospital asking for help until he sees the hospital workers getting shot up until walkers take over. Shane tries to pick Rick up but can't figure out how to get the medical equipment off of him. He begs him to wake up until gunshots kill the power to Rick's room. Shane exits the room, gun drawn. He uses a bed to block off Rick's door and runs away. The group makes it into the CDC, and they wander around yelling for help. Jenner asks if any of them are infected and asks what they want. He wants them all to do a blood test, and he seals the door off. Jenner cracks a joke that Carl is the only one he has to worry about. Rick asks what happened to the other doctors. He says he's it and shows them Vi, an AI companion, or that's what I called it, just an AI companion. I don't know if that's technically it. He's taking their blood and asks if Andrea is okay. Jackie says they haven't eaten in days. They're all eating and drinking, having fun, and Rick convinces Lori to let him have some wine, let Carl have some wine. Rick raises a toast to Jenner and thanks. Shane asks him about what happened to the other doctors. Jenner says the others left when things got bad, and a lot of others opted out by suicide. He says he stayed, hoping to do some good, and Glenn calls Shane a buzzkill, which he was in that moment. Jenner takes them to their lodging and says, take it easy on the hot water. The group feels a glimmer of hope and normalcy. We see the group showering, and they all have different emotions. Dale checks on Andrea, who's throwing up. Dale says he sees a chance to make a new start. Andrea says there's nothing left in tears. Rick asks Jenner, how's the blood, and to thank him. He falls to the ground drunk and laughing. Rick begins to pour out his emotions, and Jenner says, it'll be okay. Carol takes the kids to bed as Lori browses around the room. Shane checks her out and scares her, closing the door. He tells Lori what happened in the hospital. He didn't know what to do and couldn't hear a heartbeat. Shane says he loves her and tries to kiss her and make moves. She pushes him away and scratches his face. He leaves the room angered as Lori processes what just happened. All right, Brian, what'd you think of that opening set of scenes?
I got a lot on this, so bear with me, but I loved seeing the flashback to Shane in the hospital. I think seeing firsthand that he was telling the truth after all, that he really did think Rick was dead. Plus, like, watching soldiers shoot the living patients and doctor was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I mean, it's never talked about, but Shane pretty much did save his life by blocking the door. I mean, is that believable? No. But at least it's explained, because I was looking for something like that on how the hell that they didn't get to him. And I really do like all this cold open. I like this entire episode, like I said, so much better than the last one. Guy Ferlin directed this one. Yeah, I don't know who that is either. So all good. But he did direct Lori, Sarah Wayne Callies in Prison Break. But that's about it for what I've seen of his. And Daryl calling out Jenner on the heat he was carrying and him saying that there were plenty lying around. Exactly. That's what I keep saying. And that's what I was thinking, like, once again, when they were racing for the CDC and all these soldiers' guns and shit's just laying around, drives my ass crazy. I'm like, fucking pick one up. And that dinner scene, very reminiscent to me of the dinner scene in the first Alien, albeit obviously minus an alien bursting out of a stomach. But that's what it reminded me of. Great one shot from Fairland circling the table. You know, I love it. It stood out to me for sure. I love the little moments like them, you know, getting to take a shower with warm water. But I did laugh, though, when he was like, don't waste it. And then you had Andrea just fucking sitting in the shower, like wasting the fuck out of it. Like, goddamn, she should have died last episode. And lastly, fantastic job from Callies and Barenthal, who, by the way, I've always thought it was – no, it's Barenthal. And I've always thought it was Barenthal my entire life. So learned something new every episode doing this amazing show. But those two did fantastic portraying such a – it's just an emotional explosion that they had that was just building up over all season. Sarah just fucking killed it, especially after that scene with the trauma on her face just afterwards. Just amazing.
Yeah, Brian, you mentioned all the guns laying around, like grab them. Yeah, these motherfuckers never played Grand Theft Auto because you see those little icons floating above dead bodies with the guns and the money. You grab it.
Right.
And you saying that Andrea should have died last episode, I immediately thought of Dewey Cox. The wrong kid died. But anyway, I like the immediate flashback to the day the hospital fell. Great way to show us more of what happened. But I do question Rick not getting shot. Like you mentioned, Brian, hard to believe that that bed kept him safe. I agree, because if the walkers are in the hallway and they smell a living person in there, that bed has wheels on it. They could have rolled it out of the way. They wouldn't have had to do anything unbelievable. They could have just pushed it until it rolled. They would have got in to eat him. But also, I just find it hard to believe that they didn't shoot him. We saw the military shooting alive people, like you said, alive patients and doctors in the hallway. So it seems like they would have shot Rick in his sleep to keep him from becoming a potential threat when they peeked in the door there. It also shows us, though, that Shane did intend on being a good friend, but then just gave up and left him for dead. So it's an added layer and dynamic for him. Great line from Rick at the CDC when Jenner said, what do you want? And he said, a chance. That's strong. That's strong dialogue there. Leave it to Shane to be a dick at dinner, though, and ruin the moment of relief. Very on brand. But then Shane, just like me, for real, alcohol hits different in a hot shower. That is a pro move. Man took the liquor in the shower with him. I meant that here, not right back to
not
when
in
he
the
became,
rape scene.
Yeah, not when he started being unlikable again, when he creeps on Lori there and then has the drunken, I want that look in his eyes, turning all rapey. Fuck that guy.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
So, yeah, shower scenes like Dustin, not rapey Shane. Got it.
Yeah, that shower whiskey, not the rapey. But Lori should have told Rick immediately and let him handle it. But then again, Rick was drunk as shit, so may have been better to wait till cooler heads prevail. But tell him in the morning, shit, don't just let that go unchecked. But overall, this is a solid set of scenes to establish where we're going in this episode.
All right, Rick turns the light off in the room and lies down with Lori. He tells her we're safe here and kisses her as she continues to cry. Carl asks Rick if she's hung over at breakfast as T-Dog makes breakfast for everyone. Glenn is hung over bad, as others ask Shane what happened to his neck. Jenner joins and Andrew says they didn't come here for the eggs. He takes him to the computer room and shows him his research. He's showing them test subject 19, someone who got bit, died, and volunteered they research his progress, or their progress. The virus is similar to meningitis. Jenner tells Andrea he knows how she feels. He lost someone close as well. He says the wake-up time varies and only the brainstem comes back to life. Andrea asks he has no clue what it does he? They ask if there are other facilities, but Jenner isn't sure. He's been in the dark for over a month. Dale asks about the clock counting down. That's when the generators run out of fuel. Site-wide decontamination will happen when there is no power. The men make it to the generators, and Rick realizes it's almost out of fuel. Carl asks Lori if something is wrong. She said the AC stopped working. Jenner tears up looking at his wife's picture, saying he did his best and hopes she's proud of that. We always think there's going to be more time, but there's not. Great line. They ask Jenner what's going on as he walks away from them. Rick asks Jenner what's happening. It's prioritizing the computers over anything else. Rick tells him to get their things. We're getting out of here now. Vi announces 30 minutes to decontamination, and Jenner locks the others in the room. Rick asks what happens in 28 minutes. Jenner snaps and has Vi explain what HITs are. The air, and, you know, it's a big explanation, but essentially, the air is set on fire. Brian, that's the next set of scenes. What'd you think?
Pretty funny seeing everyone hungover again. Human stuff that is definitely welcomed and honestly few and far between all throughout the series. So it makes these moments special when we do get them. And okay. What I was fine with was Dale calling out Shane's scratches. I was even fine with Shane saying he must have done it in his sleep. What I wasn't fine with was Rick saying, oh, well, you haven't done that before. Like, how the fuck do you know that, Rick? Plus, Shane being the most obvious person ever, staring at Lori as he says, "Not like me at all." That's stupid as hell. Plus, with, I'm not going to spoil it, but when you find, when all this comes to a head with those three and you find out what you do in season two, like I said, I won't spoil it. How is Rick not immediately thinking, well, they were fucking last night? Like, I don't know. I didn't like the writing there. And I did love the explanation of everything. The graphics I thought looked very well done. Great job of the tension building up here for the first time. And honestly, a little bit of in a while. I was welcomed with the tension coming back. A great performance from Noah Emmerich as, you know, lockdown really starts taking effect and people start freaking the hell out. He and Andrew Lincoln, I think, do a tremendous job in the set of scenes with their dialogue back and forth. Just really good.
So maybe Lori was right not to tell Rick right then, because the way he fell into bed was all too familiar to me. Dog is drunk. Everybody being all hungover at breakfast is like when we get together after game day in Tallahassee, another familiar scene. Really cool scene. The first and second event gives a great look at the process of becoming a walker. I thought that was just a cool way to introduce that. Moment of panic when we find out they're about to run out of power. They really lured us into a false sense of security in an effective way. Jenner turned out to be a real piece of shit, man. Welcomed them in and then just planned to let them all die inside. I don't know how I feel about his character arc, to be honestly. Like, it seems unlikely. Like, he joked with Carl about, I'm going to have to keep my eyes on you, and seemed to be a likable guy, but then just trapped him. Seems more likely he would have explained everything to them up front and then give them the option to leave or come in. But he shut the front door and just trapped him. So, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on him, but decent set of scenes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest critique of this episode is I'm not a huge – I don't know how I feel about Jenner's character. It was kind of weird, but here's the ending. Daryl slams his liquor bottle, yelling for them to open the door as they try and break the door down. Jenner tries to convince him this is a better way to go as Daryl fails again to kill him. Jenner says this is our extinction event. Carol weeps, saying her daughter doesn't deserve to die like this. Shane pulls a gun to his head and commands he open the door. He begins shooting the computers until Rick gets the gun from him and hitting him with it. Shane says they're all done for. Rick says he thinks Jenner is lying about there being no hope. You stayed when others ran. Why? Test subject 19 was his wife. He promised he'd do all he could. Lori begs that he give them another chance. Jenner opens the door and they flee out. Jenner shakes Rick's hand and whispers something to him. Jackie says she's staying. She's not going to end up like Jim and Amy. Andrea says she's staying as well. Dale tells the others to go. Dale begs Andrea, but she says Amy is dead. The others try and break the windows, but no success. Carol brings Rick a grenade from his laundry. He uses it to break the window, and I know Bruno Mars is loving that. Dale says Andrea wins and joins her to die. She tells him to get the hell out, but he says he's staying. The others make it out and take off running and killing walkers. They make it to the vehicles, and we see Andrea and Dale exit the window. Jenner and Jackie hold hands as the others brace for the CDC building to explode. Dale and Andrea make it into the RV and they drive off from the fire as the episode ends. All right, Brian, what'd you think?
All right, I love this third act here. I mean, there's so much tension, so much going on. Again, more of the end of a miniseries, like I said, than a season finale, but I mean, that's not a bad thing. So much groundwork being laid and honestly, so much coming back into play. Like what I said earlier when I was talking about with them making their own choice and Andrea and Dale coming into play with that. And then the grenade coming back into play. You know, honestly, it is kind of funny. Carol's just carrying that shit around all willy-nilly in the backpack. But, hey, I'll allow it. Won't be the last time Carol saves their asses. And at one point in the conversation with Jenner, when Rick says he's grateful for him opening the doors and giving them a chance to get out, Jenner saying, the day will come when you won't be. That comes back around in season 7 with the title of the first episode being The Day Will Come When You Won't Be. And let me tell you, I hate that fucking episode with all my being. So that's how I felt about starting the series after that one episode. But anyway, no spoilers. When Jenner whispers to Rick, obviously I'm not going to spoil what the secret is. But when I first watched it, I thought, okay, he's telling Rick what he saw in the rec room on the monitors between Lori and Shane. That was what my guess was. And I thought, okay, well, that's really about to come to a head. But what he says isn't revealed until the season finale of season 2. But anyway, everyone does a really good job on this set of scenes. But again, Jeffrey DeMunn with another great speech. His delivery of dialogue, top notch as Dale. I love it. Andra and Dale should have honestly just both let each other die, but whatever. The CG on the explosion, though, was rough. Going to wish that was done a little bit more minimal and only shown up close. A little too big for the moment there. Also, their cars definitely should have not had windows after that blast. But, okay, we'll leave that alone, too. Again, I'd hope for more of a classic ending to a season with some stuff getting resolved anyway. But, you know, that was me looking at this as a season and not a miniseries. And so, anyway, I still have a very high score for this.
So it's a really fucked up move from Jenner to use Amy's name to rationalize with Andrea. That's not fair at all, man. Threatening Jenner with a gun is a dumb tactic to me, though. Jenner has already clearly accepted his death. He doesn't care if you shoot him or not, so, pointless there. Jenner finally letting him out is a relief. Also, I like that Jackie stayed behind. Makes sense that someone would take that stance. Like I said, with Morales and his family choosing to go their separate ways, not everyone's going to be on the same page. As for Andrea, I really wish Dale would have left her. Let her die. She sucks, man. Hate her. You don't really hate her here, but you definitely grow to hate her, Nico. Trust me. Trust Brian. What a dick statement from Shane and Carol when Carol goes in her purse. I don't think a nail file will help. Jesus, man. But it was funny. I laughed. I can't lie. huge relief that everyone got out okay, but from that large of an explosion, like you said, Brian, those vehicles would have definitely suffered some damage, at least some damage. That's an error. But that's another solid episode to another emotional episode. Another solid ending to another emotional episode.
Especially considering how shitty that RV or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was a big explosion, man. Like, even just the, you know, like the pressure, the size or whatever, you know, it would fuck it up, I think, a little bit. I thought it was a really good episode as well. I did like 5 a little better just because it pulled on my heartstrings a little more, developed some characters. Man, the ending, you know, Rick, I thought Andrew Lincoln was great at the end of episode 5, you know, just begging for them to open the doors and all that, like, and everybody's hopeless. Man, there's a lot of chaos going on. I really like that. I really like the ending of episode 5. I thought it was really good. 6 was good as well. But, you know, like we've already mentioned, it's kind of a throwing noodles to the wall and see if it sticks. And I think it stuck, and it obviously did because they made 10 more seasons and it's been super successful. So, yeah. Do y'all got any fun facts before we give a quick rating or anything? Dustin, you got any fun facts or final thoughts?
I got a couple. Looking forward to the second season. Frank Darabont fired the writing staff only to find himself fired by AMC. So, damn. Robert Kirkman said that this is the only episode he regrets because it tells the survivors about the rest of the world rather than learning firsthand. I kind of agree with that in hindsight. And this is the only season of the entire 11 season series that there are no episodes rated under an 8 on IMDb. So this is a very highly regarded season.
I thought it was good. I'll just go first with my rating. Because there was only 6 episodes, I didn't dislike any of them. My least favorite episode probably was episode 4, just because I thought there was, I don't know, I didn't need all that stuff at the nursing home kind of thing. But I don't know if that plays off later. But overall, I would still give the season a 9. I think it was really good.
Yeah, I loved getting into this, obviously, because I immediately binged 7 full seasons in 2 weeks. Now, I'll say of the 7 seasons that I've seen, this one is probably the second lowest in my ratings behind season 7. But even with that said, I'm also going to give this a flat 9. So that should tell you how I regard seasons 2 and 6, or 2 through 6. I'm sorry.
All right. So, I did this a little bit differently than y'all. Like, I don't have a flat score because I rated each individual episode and then did a composite just like I did on the Haunting of Hill House. So, that being said, my rating is a 9.20833. So, when you add
you went around that shit.
You went around that shit.
You divide that or combine that with your 2s, 9s, that gives us a composite score of a 9.06944333.
There divide, we go. Make this divide. Do these compute?
Yeah.
No.
These number crunching.
Yeah, and I didn't do the composite rating for season 1 on IMDb. I should have, but overall, the series has an 8.1. So it's good show. Good shit.
Wow.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the season. It was really good. I'm looking forward to watching more. I don't know. I kind of feel like I would just. I don't know. I shouldn't think this way, but I feel like I don't want to start new shows until we start reviewing them. I don't know. That's probably stupid of me, but anywho.
Well, we just started reviewing this, so you got, let's get it. You got 10 more seasons.
Whew. All right.
The show on IMDb for the first 6 episodes, I just did it real quick because there's only 6 of them. The composite score on there is an 8.5333. So we're a little higher, but damn it, it's good.
Oh, yeah. It's real good. I had a great time with it. But it did leave you kind of wanting more. Little, I wouldn't say unsatisfied, but, you know, it was only 6 episodes. It obviously did well. Really good choice, Dustin. I'm glad you picked it. Brian, you want to announce your pick for the next series, and I'll shout out our blood donors. We'll get the hell out of here.
Yes, I am. We are going to be doing True Detective Season 1. To me, Nico said that Haunting of Hill House was his favorite episode, or favorite season of anything in television. This is mine. So it really stuck with me when I first watched through, and bothered me a lot because of how true crimey, you know, really that it is. That kind of stuff bothers me. But, you know, I'm looking forward to doing it, obviously. And, you know, am I looking forward to watching it again? I don't know. I wonder if it'll affect me the same.
Man, speaking of, before I shout out the blood donors, I looked at a little bit of TikTok today, and there's a guy, I don't follow him, but he shows up on my FYP a lot. He's one of the big movie review guys on there. His name is Seth Film Reviews. He polled 1,500 people and asked them what their single favorite season of television was. And True Detective Season 1 was the number 3 overall winner of his poll. I think the only two above it was Breaking Bad Season 4 or 5. That was number 1. And Game of Thrones Season 4 was number 2, I believe. And it was close. So yeah. True Detective Season 1 is very highly regarded, and I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well, because this is another one just like Haunting of Hill House. I've never watched it. So, but I hear, you know, Brian has hyped it a lot. So I'm looking forward to it.
This one might be one that I just binge watch in a weekend just because I'm so hooked. I don't know. I just don't want to cheat myself and go 2 episodes at a time anymore, I think, because you kind of get like a jaded view, and then you're like, oh, I was kind of harsh. I was kind of harsh on those last couple episodes. The next 2 made them better. So I think I'm just going to watch going forward. I think I'm just going to watch more than the 2 we're doing, just so I can have better context. But let's shout out our blood donors, Christina Tower, final girl donor. We're going to be doing her pick on the movie review show next week, The Mist. And according to Mike, that's an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Just kidding, brother. Love you. Camper Level Reoccurring, Clayton J., Nina, Michelle Mirza, the Horror Movie Crew Podcast, Alex Seligson, and Michael Evans. Camp Counselor Reoccurring, Edwin Hernandez Gunn, Joe Swinford, Shan, Adrian Aiello, Brian Samick, Andrew Ferguson, Matt Strickland, Brooke Maley, Thorne David Phillips, Heather Superduck, Jennifer Davis from Too Close to Home Pod, and a new camp counselor donor, Dana Tucker. She's a big fan. She's been DMing us a lot, asking questions about reviews we've done. Really appreciate the love and the feedback. We appreciate all of y'all's support. We hope y'all have enjoyed The Walking Dead. I know me and Brian did for sure, especially Brian. I mean, this man's watched 200 hours of television in 2 weeks, so shout out to him. We'll be back next week with True Detective Season 1. Just want to remind everybody.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.